Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another great episode we have here at Suspense Radio in honor of one of my favorite action adventure characters, of course, James Bond, with his movie Skyfall coming out last week. Nobody does it better. And that's what we have today for you. We have a fabulous show coming up, 2 hours, Suspense Radio. Headlining it off here, we're going to have Mr. Kent Anderson's going to be talking about his latest book, joined by Marie Force. Then coming up at 11 o'clock is going to be New York Times bestselling author Ted Decker, followed by Anna Alborn, which I think I probably screwed that one up. But anyway, we'll get all that straightened out here in the next 2 hours, because that's what is going on right now. Suspense Radio starts. Here we go.
Welcome to my nightmare. I think you're gonna like it. I think you're gonna feel alone.
Again, everybody, we'd like to welcome you here to this pre-Thanksgiving show of Suspense Radio, brought to you by Suspense Magazine. I'm your host, John Robb. The December issue's out. If you might be following us on Facebook, you might already know that a lot of authors have come out and said that they are on the best of 2012 list for Suspense Magazine, and that whole list will be revealed, along with the winner of the inaugural Crimson Scribe Award, which is now brought to you by Suspense Magazine for the best book of the year. That will be in there too. Unless the author, all of a sudden, you follow them and they put it out there, they haven't yet, but they very well might. And you'll get our best book of the year, 2012, the inaugural Crimson Scribe Award is what it's called. But anyway, we're going to move on here right now with our first guest. His name is Kent Anderson. He is the author of the book Cold Glory. And his newest book, Silver Cross, comes out November the 27th. So we'd like to welcome Kent to the show. Kent, thank you so much for how you doing today.
I am doing very well, John. It's my pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me on the show.
So we talked a little off the air, and we were talking about Cold Glory and Silver Cross and how Silver Cross now is the kind of sequel to the book Cold Glory. Give everybody a little bit of behind the scenes. If you want to kind of start with people who might not know you, going back with Cold Glory and then coming into Silver Cross, kind of let us know, the thoughts behind and the behind the scenes action going on here.
Well, Cold Glory, which came out last fall, is a thriller. It is mostly contemporary, but what I wanted to do with this series was to take some stories that had their basis during the time of the American Civil War. Of course, the sesquicentennial of the Civil War is happening here. And I wanted to take that era and take some stories from that era and then make them connect to a storyline happening in the present. And Cold Glory, the idea for Cold Glory came about during our great Oklahoma ice storm of 2007. I live in Oklahoma City, and we were iced in and couldn't go anywhere, but I still had power in my house. So I wasted a lot of time on the internet. So I'm online all the time, and I found this wonderful website called eyewitness2history.com, and it's various eyewitness accounts of well-known events from throughout history. And I've been interested in the Civil War period for quite a while, and so I clicked over to the Civil War era, and there was an account of Robert E. Lee's surrender to Ulysses S. Grant at Appomattox Courthouse at the end of the Civil War. And one line caught my attention in there. This had been written by a member of Grant's staff, so he was there. He was in a position to know. And he said that the two generals, Lee and Grant, were alone, just the two men, no staff, no one else in the room, for just a few minutes before the official surrender took place. And, of course, my mind started working and the wheels started turning at that point. And the question, of course, that came to my mind was, what did they talk about in that few
minutes?
And that line,
that's kind of a rare sentence. Yeah, because that's kind of a very rare thing, of course, to have. It's almost like, you know, I guess you want to say two major leaders alone in a room by themselves with no one else around.
Absolutely. And that's where the entire story that became Cold Glory came from. And so in my fictional world, what Lee and Grant talked about was to create a sort of what I would call a caretaker group that would be stewards of the government in the period after the war ended in case the government was to become destabilized again. And, of course, it was very unstable in those years right after the Civil War. Well, then the contemporary part of the story is that now, 150 years later, there is a group calling themselves the Glory Warriors, sort of a descendant of that group that Grant and Lee envisioned, but they've twisted the vision around a little bit to where they're trying to actually seize power for themselves now in the 21st century. And so that's what the whole story turns on. And I came up with a couple of two lead characters, really, that are in both books, in fact, in Cold Glory and Silver Cross. Mm-hmm. And the male lead is a history professor named Nick Journey, who teaches at a small college in rural Oklahoma. And he is a pretty unassuming guy. He's a single father. He has a son who has severe autism. And part of what I wanted to do with that is how many thriller heroes are actually parents? Not too many in thriller fiction. And so I wanted to create a different dimension of him. There are not too many parents, much less a parent of a child with a severe developmental disability. So everything Nick Journey does, yeah, he's out there saving the day, but everything he does, he also has to think about his son, and he has to make choices about what he does involving what would be best for his son, because he can't just go off and leave this child while he goes out and saves the day. So that's the one character, and I wanted to create a different kind of thriller hero in Nick. And in the female lead is named Meg Tallman. She is an investigator for a low-level, kind of obscure government office called the Research and Investigations Office, RIO. And Meg Tallman is a 5 foot, 1 inch fireball of a woman. She talks tough. She has a mouth on her. She is a master of using technology, of using databases to build a case. She can shoot. She can run with the big boys. But the little spin in her character is that this tough-talking woman is also a classically trained concert pianist. And she constantly has sort of a battle internally over what has more of a pull with her, whether it is her work in investigations and technology or her work in the music world. And so these are my two characters. And Meg Tallman and Nick Journey are the only ones who can stop what's happening in Cold Glory. Nick comes across the documentation and Meg is the only one who believes him, and that arranges them and sets them up to be against this modern-day Glory Warriors organization that is trying to take power in the United States and begins conducting assassinations in the United States in the present. So that sets up what happens in Cold Glory, which was, again, that was the first book in the series and came out last year.
And so, you know, I want to remind everybody, first of all, that your website is bkentanderson.com, and that's just the letter B. It's not like B-E, B. Kent Anderson. So bkentanderson.com, and you have everything kind of listed on there. Now, the one thing that intrigues me is you got the idea by kind of scouring the internet, and you decided to go ahead and go with, like, the Civil War kind of theme, but you decided that the story was the first thing that you were going to do, and then you decided you were going to build these characters around them. So did you have any kind of idea with the characters, or that it was going to be a couple books or anything like that, when you decided to write down both of these books?
Well, it's interesting because I really didn't originally have the idea of it being a series. And when I talked to my agent, I signed with a new literary agent, and he popped up and said, the sesquicentennial of the Civil War is coming up. You want to do a series? And I said, sure. And at first I didn't quite know what I was getting myself into, but the more I research the Civil War era, the more I learn about that period, the more I know there are a lot of incredible untold stories from that era of American history. And it's been a great learning experience for me to be able to learn more. And for example, going into Silver Cross is a whole different kind of story involving a notorious female Confederate spy, her very mysterious death, and that also involves Emperor Napoleon III of France and a connection to the American Civil War. So there's all kinds of great stories there. And again, it wasn't really supposed to be a series to begin, but after, you know, I had this conversation with my agent and we decided to do a few books in the series, I thought, you know, there are a lot of good things I can do with these characters that I can learn with them and see how they grow. For example, in the second book, Nick Journey's son is going through some real developmental challenges, and he has to start thinking about making some hard choices about what is best for his son's future. And all this at the same time as this huge conspiracy is hanging overhead, and once again he's in a position of trying to unravel the whole thing and keep it all together. So there's that, and with Meg Tallman in the second book, the modern part of the story turns on the fact that a very close friend of hers, a musician friend of hers, has been murdered, and that's where the story begins in the present. So it's been fun to grow with these characters and see what else they can do, and the challenge, of course, is to keep it fresh with the historical part and grow the characters at the same time.
Now, what's kind of like the biggest thing that you learned when you started going with Cold Glory and then you're moving here on to Silver Cross? What's like one of the biggest lessons that maybe you learned by yourself, you learned with your writing, going from the first book to the second, kind of working yourself into a series now, to have to keep everything kind of straight and make sure that you don't mess up somebody's maybe favorite color or something to that effect or anything like that? I mean, because the funny thing is that's what people are going to pick up. They're going to say, wait a second, you said that they loved yellow. How can they, you know, this and that or anything like that? So, you know, so as yourself, what have you learned?
Well, it's tough because, like right now, I've had, Cold Glory, it's been now 4 years since I started writing Cold Glory, and I have to think, now, what did I say about that in that particular story, and how can that be consistent with what I'm writing in Silver Cross? And, of course, now Silver Cross is about to come out, so it's been finished and at the publishers for over a year now as well. So with, you know, those long times, those long production times that the publishing industry is notorious for. I have to go back and I have to think about what I did and think about how I can make sure that the characters are consistent. And one of the things my editor and I kind of went around a little bit in Silver Cross about Meg Tolman's character, and I actually made some changes. She maybe had a little too hard of an edge in the Silver Cross that my editor thought we needed to soften down a little bit to make her more consistent with where she was in Cold Glory. Now, she was tough in both books, but going back and thinking about it now, yeah, I had given her a little bit more of a hard edge. She kind of demanded to have more to say than I necessarily she should have in the second book. So just trying to be consistent. And then again, it is those little details like what color is Nick Journey's house painted? What color is Meg Tolman's car? Things like that. And I actually did mess that up at one point, and a reader pointed it out to me. So,
see,
you know,
I told you.
Kind of stuff happens.
I freaking told you that was going to happen. That's exactly what those things are. I mean, and you try to get every little detail and every little thing going, but the one thing, I guess, that makes you feel good, even if they do point out those kind of mistakes, is that the reader's paying attention.
That's
and
right.
That means you have intelligent readers reading your books, and that kind of has to make you amp your things, you know, amp your writing up as an author, knowing, hey, you know what, I gotta be a lot more intelligent when I write. I gotta make sure that, you know, I'm not shortchanging them on anything, because I think there's a lot of writers out there today that when you kind of read their things, I think they kind of shortchange the author. I think it's important that they remember that their audience is very intelligent and not to dumb them down in any way, especially when you're writing in a historical thriller. You know, I mean, they can take whatever you got thrown at them. So I think that it's a wonderful thing.
That's exactly right. And that's kind of the double-edged sword of doing something that's based in real history, too, because, you know, anyone can go find the same historical resources that I used, or even better ones, and challenge me on the history. So that's the tough thing. And one of the most gratifying things has been, you know, some emails that I have received from readers who have said, wow, I'm really glad you got this detail right about, say, the aspect of the Confederate uniform. Or, I mean, just little details like that. Because, you know, the Civil War era in this country is, a lot of people have done a lot of scholarly work on it. So there's a lot of information out there. I mean, there's so much information available that people can readily go to. So the challenge is on me to make sure that I can make it as accurate as I can at a remove of 150 years. Because if I don't, someone's going to call me on it. And you're right, John, when you say that that's a good thing, because that means that the reader is really engaged with what you're doing, and I don't get, you know, annoyed with the reader who points out some minor discrepancy I may have had. I just say, well, thank you. I guess I missed that one, and I'm really glad that you're paying that close of attention to the story. And that's
exactly
really nice to have readers that engaged with the history and the direction the story's going.
Right. And so I want to remind everybody that we're speaking here with author Kent Anderson. The book is called Silver Cross. BKentAnderson.com is the website. So, well, here's a quick question. And, you know, what was there one book, was there one author, was there something that kind of made you, because, you know, throughout your career, when people go and they look at your bio, you know, they see that you were involved with radio and that you did some producing. You did some things with an orchestra. But, and you also did you know, some stuff for the magazine as a journalist. But what was kind of the turning point for you that said, hey, you know what, I want to start writing thrillers? Was it something that kind of hit in you, had always been inside you, or was it just something else?
Well, a couple of things.
Because you did write under a pseudonym called David Kent.
I had four books
published
under the name David Kent between 2003 and 2006. Those were all thrillers also, not really the historical component there, and I loved doing those. So thrillers have always been what I've read. Ever since I read Clive Cussler's Raise the Titanic back in junior high, you know, I've been interested in thrillers. So that's always what I aspired to write professionally, and as far as fiction goes. As far as the Civil War connection, I have always been interested in American history, but hadn't really gotten into the Civil War particularly until I read Michael Shara's The Killer Angels, which, of course, is the book on which the movie Gettysburg was based. I mean, he was a Pulitzer Prize winner, and I was absolutely mesmerized by that book, by Shara's language, and how gripping the narrative was and how real the people were. And that really kindled my interest in that particular era of American history. And although it took a number of years for me to actually write about it, it was in my mind. And when I saw that, you know, that website and that line about Lee and Grant a few years ago, that's when it all started to click into place. And I thought, I have to write about this. I have to write about this era now.
You know, and that's something that is definitely important, because you took something that was close to you, and I think a lot of people need to realize that it's not only an interest to you, but you have like an emotional attachment possibly in some way to the subject matter, which, you know, which just lends a little bit more credence to, you know, to kind of what you write. And again, the book here is Silver Cross that we're talking about with Ken Anderson. And, you know, kind of off the book thing, you know, when you're sitting there and you're watching TVs and movies, like, what's on your DVR right now? Like, what are you interested in? Like, what's getting with you? I mean, and, you know, any kind of, like, movies or anything like that you're curious to see? I know that The Hobbit's coming out. Like I said, James Bond's coming, you know, just came out. The Jack Reacher story's coming out in December. What are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm going to see Lincoln next week. I mean,
Lincoln.
Yeah, I mean, that just opened yesterday, and next Friday, instead of shopping on my Black Friday, I'm going to go see Lincoln. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I've heard that Daniel Day-Lewis is just outstanding as Abraham Lincoln. I'll be interested to see Tom Cruise as Jack Reacher. I like everyone else, I was rather surprised by that bit of casting. I'm interested to see what happens. And I've read a couple of interviews with Lee Child, and you know, he's been very gracious about it and very cool about it.
I think he had to be contractually.
Sure.
I think contractually, I think he had to be. He couldn't pull a Clive Cussler once the hair and tell his friends, you know, don't go see this crappy movie. You know, but I will say that living here in L.A., that I have heard some scuttlebutt behind it, and the movie studio, put it this way, there's a reason why you haven't seen hardly any marketing with it, and it's a month away. The studio, I think, feels, first of all, that they screwed up and put it the weekend after The Hobbit comes out, which means it's going to be a very poor opening that they think, and I don't know, I don't think they have a lot of confidence in it, so I think that's why you don't see a lot of marketing dollars. But that's the one thing that you have to look at when you look at Hollywood. If you don't see a lot of marketing behind it, the studio really doesn't have a lot of faith in it. And that's
right, and that's
and
too
I
bad
sorry
because
for
the Lee's books are terrific. You know, the
right,
books
I feel
are
sorry
around.
For Lee, and it has nothing to do with his writing if the movie flops, and that's the one thing I think that people have to realize. If the movie doesn't do well, that does not mean that the character is not written well. It means that Hollywood screwed it up. So don't look at anything at all about this that Lee's character is anything more than just one of the one of the best adventure thriller characters that has probably ever been written out there. It's got to be one of the top 10 most popular, without a doubt. So that's the one thing I think a lot of people have to get off of them. It's like, oh, well, the movie's not good, so I guess the character's not good. Well, it's kind of a stupid statement. It's like the one for the money with Janet Ivanovich. You know, that movie was terrible, and that doesn't mean that her books were terrible. I mean, that's the one thing that they got to realize. So I would very much caution that. But, yeah, the Lincoln one, I tell you what, I don't get the fascination that everybody has with Abraham Lincoln. I really just don't. I know that he was I think, you know, I've read a ton of stuff about him, a lot of things about Lincoln, and I think that if a lot of people read a lot of stuff about Lincoln, they're going to realize that he was a lot more than just the president that freed the slaves, and that's all I'm going to say.
Oh, sure, and that's the complexity.
That's what people need to realize. And people say him, you know, as the greatest president of all time. Well, he doesn't even really make my top five, I got to be honest with you.
The interesting thing I think will be about that movie, well, I'm hoping so anyway, is to add a little bit more complexity to the character, to bring him down off the marble pedestal.
Yeah, yeah.
Let us see, because as I've researched the Civil War era, it's very true. Lincoln was far from universally admired during his own time. I mean, he was a very polarizing figure. Now, I do think he was a great president, but at the time that he was in office, I mean, it was really the darkest time this country had ever seen. So he was a very polarizing character, and I hope that the movie gets into some of these complexities about the character and about some of the decisions he made in the management of the war. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how that plays out.
Well, I'll tell you what, Kent, we want to thank you so much for coming on. We've run out of time here, but I want to remind everybody again, the website is bkentanderson.com, and the book that comes out November 27th is called Silver Cross, kind of the second in the series, which the first were Cold Glory. So everyone, I, you know, suggest right now before Christmas, whatever you got, go out, get it, read it, give it to somebody as a gift, whatever you got to do. But we want to thank Kent so much for coming on and talking with us about it. So, hey, enjoy yourself. Have fun Lincoln next week. Don't get run over by any weird women trying to get sales or something.
John, it's been my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
All right, you have a good one. Enjoy. Thanks a lot, Kent.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So again, everybody, the author, Kent Anderson, the book, Silver Cross, bkentanderson.com is the website. We are going to be back with our next guest, Marie Force. We've had her on before, and she is now back to talk about her latest book, Fatal Deception, which is the fifth book in her Fatal series. And we will see you all in about 5 minutes.
welcome everybody back here from the break. And I want to thank again Mr. Kent Anderson for being a guest here on the show to talk about his book, Silver Cross. We're trying to get a hold of Marie Force. We knew that this might be difficult. She had something that was coming up, and we didn't know if we were going to be able to get her or not. It was a 50-50 chance, and we are on the opposite side of the 50 right now. So we are going to see if maybe she calls in here during her segment before Ted Decker comes on at 11 o'clock. And if she does, that's great. If she doesn't, we'll just reschedule. You know, we've had her on before to talk about her Fatal book series, Fatal series, book five, and it's called Fatal Deception. And if you guys know Marie, it's marieforce.com is her website. She's more of a romantic suspense author, so if that's something that you are intrigued about, I think that that is something that she's definitely an author that you need to go pick up. The one thing that I did write this month that you're going to see in the December issue from the letter with the editor is talking about kind of everybody has kind of like New Year's resolutions, and I kind of challenge readers to kind of get out of your zone a little bit and find some of those different kinds of genre styles that kind of come off mystery, thriller, suspense, and horror, and check something out. So if romantic suspense is one of those, you know, tangent genres that you haven't checked out before, there's a lot of great authors out there that you can, you know, go ahead and find out about. Marie is definitely one to go in, but any kind of thing, you know, get off of your zone, get something else, you know, open your mind up to a lot of different things. I think that it's very important. You have ample opportunity now with all of the stuff that's going on in books today, with all the different people that are, you know, publishing, and you're trying to figure out what's going on and everything else. So, you know, it's just one of those things. That would be my New Year's resolution to you, is to try to find a different kind of genre that you normally wouldn't read and see what you think. You know, like I said, you know, jump into something else. A lot of the books that I see that are coming out here, too, kind of looking over the new releases, and there's a lot of them that will be here. We are going to have an interview with Vince Flynn and his book, and we wish Vince nothing but the best. If many of you don't know, he was recovering from a disease, and he's getting himself back together. He's still writing fabulous with his Mitch Rapp series. So we're going to be interviewing Vince for our January issue. There was one person that we interviewed in December that you guys are going to notice is Richard Belzer. And you know Richard Belzer, of course, stand-up comedian, his acting stints on Law & Orders, his character Munch that he has out there. But he wrote a book that was called Dead Wrong, and it's more of a behind-the-scenes look of the things that you don't know, and he lays out a lot of great facts on a lot of interesting cases that might be a little controversial on how they ended, like Marilyn Monroe, like John F. Kennedy, and a couple other things. So it's one of those great reads to sit there and read. And what I suggest if someone reads a book like that is to definitely have, you know, go in with an open mind and figure out not really, you know, is this truthful and all this happening and everything else like that. No, go into it with an open mind, as in things like this can take place. And when you see the facts before you, you have to make your own determination on what you choose to believe. And that's what I'm going to let you know. Of course, James Patterson has another book out because it's another month, and it's called Merry Christmas, Alex Cross. Stephanie Plum comes out with her Notorious 19 here. Looks like next week on November 20th, along with David Balducci, comes out with his latest book, The Forgotten. Michael Conley's coming up, Glenn Beck, with Agenda 21, which is a thriller. And, you know, Glenn Beck loves thrillers, and him and Brad Thor are great friends. And he loves the genre. I mean, he can't get enough of it. So he's definitely one to check out there on his writing. James Rollins and Rebecca Cantrell are coming out with a book called City of Screams. That's one that we got a hold of and we reviewed, and it's definitely one that is, I guess you want to say it's a little different that you really haven't seen James Rollins write with somebody, and if you know both of them, you'll know that if they, it is kind of one of those marriages that works
You might not have thought of it when you see them separately, but that's definitely a book to check out. Tom Clancy with Mark Greaney. We know Mark from his books, the Starvation Lake series that he's written. And so he is coming out with one with Tom Clancy called Threat Vector. And, oh, no, my fault. Mark Greaney did not write Starvation Lake. That's my fault. Mark Greaney is the one who wrote The Gray Man, Ballistic, On Target, you know, writes those fast-paced ones. This is the second time he's going to write with Clancy. He wrote one with Locked On. Now it's called Threat Vector. Like I said John Grisham. Allison Brennan with another Lucy Kincaid novel is coming out called Stalked. That came out at the end of October. That was a fabulous book. Clive Cussler with another Dirk Pitt series, which his son is now writing, came out here at the beginning of November. So basically the thing is that you have a lot of choices. There's a lot of different things and a lot of different books that you can go out there and read, along with movies. You know, that's the other thing that I always like to talk about. You know, we're talking about here is, we kind of touched on a little bit with Kent, was the fact of the Jack Reacher character coming out with Tom Cruise being the lead character. And like I said, a lot of people are going to view that, if it's not very good, that maybe these characters flawed. And I caution you to think along those lines, for the simple fact of when Hollywood gets a hold of things, sometimes things get lost in the shuffle, and sometimes things just don't go their way. And I got to tell you, I'm burning a candle called Cherries on Snow, and damn, it's sweet, and it's very good smelling. So if you ever go to Yankee Candle, I know it's out for the holidays, but it's called Cherries on Snow, and I'm burning it here in my studio as I'm doing this, and it's just like filling up the room. So I just had to tell you that, because I just got a big whiff of cherry. But kind of back to Reacher, is like I said, don't view that as any kind of knock on Lee's writing whatsoever if they kind of mess this thing up. And I have a strong feeling that it's not going to be, and I've not seen anything of it. Maybe the trailer, but I've not seen anything of the movie. I have heard some things from people that are in the business that say that the studio is not really behind this thing, that they're not, you know, because like I said, you're not seeing a lot of marketing. You're not seeing a lot of that stuff going on out there. And that technically lends itself to say, hey, you know, we're trying to do this built-in audience. The problem with the built-in audience is on the character is that, well, let's create, you know, let's face it, people are not very happy that Tom Cruise is playing Jack Reacher. So they kind of already knocked off their fan base, you know, by doing that. And that's one of the bad things that, you know, Hollywood can get a hold of. But, hey, you know, what are you going to do? We have our Green Lake coming up here, and that's progressing awful nicely. The next episode should be released. You can find it. The best way to kind of do that is you want to kind of go to Smashwords, and you can just re-download the book and the new scenes in there. You can kind of go to Barnes & Noble and the new scenes in there. You know, when you read, just download the book. So that's something that, you know, you guys can check out, a lot of other things like that. Still waiting to see if Marie can call in here. She has not, but, you know, we'll see what we can do. Why don't we do a little preview here right now of Mr. Decker and his latest book called The Sanctuary. Now, Ted, of course, is a very, very popular author, so a lot of people have read his books. I have not had the opportunity to talk to Ted. This is going to be the first time that I'm going to be able to talk with him in person. We've had him in the magazine before. We didn't talk to him. It was more along the lines of email. And so it's going to be very interesting to kind of see the kind of workings of his mind and kind of how he writes, because you know that a lot of his books they kind of have like a very spiritual kind of background. They kind of have a very lying undertone like that, even though he kind of writes in that thriller sense. There's always that underlining, a very humanist approach to his characters and kind of how they maneuver themselves through the book and through the story and kind of how he writes that. One of the only authors, I think, that's done that this way. And so I'm very curious to figure out, you know, what his thought process was in doing something like that and kind of bringing those kind of elements to a thriller book when you don't really see them. And he really took a big chance. I mean, he took a shot in the dark to see if this was actually going to work, and he hit a home run with it. And The Sanctuary is, you know, another book that he's done that is just, you know, a fabulous rendition because, again, in his book before, you know, the Priest's Graveyard, The Sanctuary also involves the story of a vigilante priest, Danny Hansen, which is serving a prison term for things that he had done in the past, which where he was in the book, The Priest's Graveyard, and now he brings him back here in The Sanctuary. And so he's bringing the elements of a lot of, like I said, a lot of humanistic approach. He brings his other character into, which was in The Priest's Graveyard, and her name was, it was Renee. I'm trying to remember her last name. But her book, her name was Renee, and she was a very delicately written character. You could tell that he spent a ton of time trying to create the development in these two and how they were kind of interact because they came from two totally separate worlds and kind of came together. And so now that he brings them forward here in The Sanctuary, it's just kind of another Gilmore. That was her name, Renee Gilmore. As they kind of came together in the last book, and now they're kind of coming together here into the next one. You know, Ted has that way of creating that entire world like that, being able to take two totally separate worlds, bringing them together, and making them work. The book has came out with, you know, absolutely tremendous reviews. You know, like his past three books, which was Three, The Bride Collector, and like I said, The Priest's Graveyard. I do believe this is the first time he's ever written a series kind of this way with the books kind of going forward. If you kind of hear some coughing in the background, that's my producer. He's kind of sick, and he's trying to keep it all together here. So if you kind of hear that, that's kind of what you're hearing. The other thing that we kind of have going on with Ted is, you know, a lot of people look and they think, you know, a lot of his books, you know, I mean, they're dark and they're dark in a way that is, like I said, it's kind of, it's very weird to explain. And I don't really know kind of how to explain any better than just kind of a dark spiritualistic kind of way. And so that's something that you have, you know, to look forward to if you haven't read Ted Dekker. I really don't know why you haven't kind of picked up one of his books because, you know, they're all fabulous. And I'm on his website right now, you know, teddekker.com, kind of just checking everything out, looking back. And, you know, he's written so many. I mean, he's delved into the fantasy part, which is, I believe, where he started. You know, kind of have done some older fiction. I mean, he's gotten, you know, over 20-some books that he's written out here. And now he's kind of found himself with these thrillers, like I said, but in a kind of a little different way of, you know, using a spiritual undertone to all of his work. So that's very interesting. What we're going to do here next is let me take a little bit of a break. Let me see if I can get Marie back on the phone. If we can't, that's all right, because in 15 minutes or maybe a little earlier when Ted calls in, we're going to have him come on in, and we'll chat with him for a while, and we'll see what's going on. But in the meantime, let me see what I can get here going, because you don't want to hear me rambling on anymore. I'm not very interesting. I understand that. And we'll be right back in a second. Hold on. I can feel no sense of measure, no illusion as we take refuge. Do
No phone, take your place. You know what I mean. We have the same tree, daughter came.
The drinks, got to come back here. If you want to call in here real fast, we don't get a lot of listen live. We get, almost everybody listens to everything, of course, archived. The number is 877-666-9320 if you want to call real fast. If you have any questions you want to ask Ted, I'll try to get them on the air. You can also, of course, go onto the chat if you want to have anything there too. But 877-666-9320. If you want to, call in here and ask any kind of questions, like I said, we don't get a lot of people that listen live. I know it's Saturday morning, but we are over 82,000 people now that listen to our show, and we are so grateful for all of you. That what we decided to do is our December issue, which is our best of in Suspense Magazine, our December issue. We are actually going to have for free for everyone. We're going to post it on our website, suspensemagazine.com, and it's going to be a free magazine for everybody. So you listen to the show, the December magazine will come out around the 5th. Just keep checking the website, and you will be able to, like I said, look at it free, the whole thing, not just a couple pages, not just a couple, 5 or 6 pages or whatever. You get the whole thing for free, the whole best of. See what you think of it. Let us know, how we're doing, because we spend a lot of time and trying to put all of this together, and it's not an easy thing to do. A lot of people might think, digital magazine or this and that, but pulling it all together is very much a labor of love, I must say. So that's something that you will definitely be interested in is getting a free magazine, and you just go on the site, you're going to have it there, click it, read it, see what you think, and let us know. While we're waiting here again for Ted, we got about another 10 minutes for him to come online. I'm not sure really what to talk about. I'm just going to be honest with you here because I wasn't quite prepared to do a half-hour improv speaking. What I will say is this, is that the magazine, let me get on here on the site, because our November issue came out about 10 or 12 days ago or so, and we were able to talk with DJ McIntosh, Laurie Armstrong, Richard Dosh, and John Conley, along with a lot of other great things that we have going on in the magazine. And John Land is, when you look and you'll see, John Land is another good friend of ours, and he's doing a show here on Monday, November the 19th, on what's called BookTrib. And if you go to BookTrib.com, that's Book, T-R-I-B, you're able to see and you're able to chat with John live at 7:30 Eastern Time, p.m., on November the 19th, and he's going to talk about his book, Pandora's Temple. The reason I bring that up is, first of all, because, John deserves all the praise he gets for the stuff that he does. But the other thing is because one of these things that a lot of authors have to do is to promote themselves in marketing. If you're an author and you're trying to figure out what to do, there's a lot of these great sites that you can use, a lot of ones that are not going to rip you off, because there are some out there that will promise you the world or promise you whatever, and it's nothing more than they want your money and not going to do anything for you because it's stuff you could do on your own. But BookTrib, Trib, however you pronounce it, T-R-I-B, Trib, that is a very good site that a lot of authors use. Steve Barry's used it in the past. Now John Land's going to use it, where you're able to kind of chat with the author there, you know, live one-on-one, back and forth. There's no moderator going on. It's just the author, the audience, back and forth, kind of ask and answer anything that you want to get out there. And it's just another way that you're able to interact, you know, with your favorite authors if you don't go to conventions, because they have them around the United States, but not every author can make every convention. I mean, that's a lot of grueling. Besides really Heather Graham, who I think she spends more time in conventions than she does in her own home. She is one of the biggest supporters out there that fans get to meet all the time. This is one of the ways that you're able to, you know, kind of see them. I believe it's videoed. Let's go and see what we got. But I believe it's videoed, and you're able to, you know, see them as they're doing stuff. But like I said, John Land, the book is Pandora's Temple. It is out. He'll be there Monday, November the 19th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, and be able to find out a lot more about John. He's a very entertaining, very funny man, loves chatting with the audience, and so that's one that you guys should check out, and that's booktrib.com. It's called the All You Can Eat Literary Buffet, and if you are an author looking for promotion, then contact them, see what they can do for you, because this is one of the best sites out there for people to promote their books. And that's another great site to be able to grab, because I think Facebook is getting a little bit daunting and, quite frankly, a little bit boring. I'm trying to maybe get away from Facebook now, for the simple fact that I just can't really handle all the stuff anymore. So we just put little things out there now and then on what's going on with our stuff. We have our, we always put new things magazine wise and stuff like that that's coming out. But other than that, we're going to try to maybe get away a little bit more from those types of things. More things on our website. More things for you to, get in other kind of ways, just because, I don't know. I mean, it's just one of those weird things. I'm having a little computer issue here. Not really sure what's going on, but we'll get to it. So that's just one thing that, you know, that I suggest is to be able to go on and do those things. So if you are also an author and you're trying to find out, you know, different ways to marketing, it's not an easy thing to do. It's a fun thing to do. I think that it's always fun to go out and talk about your books, and I think that you shouldn't be shy about it. I think that's where a lot of people kind of fall short, is they're maybe afraid to go out and talk about their books in some way. I'm not really sure, you know, why, but they kind of are. And I think that you need to kind of get over that. That's just kind of all I got to say about that one. Again, we're going on here, and we got about another 5 minutes, so we're going to take a quick break. Again, come back, and hopefully we'll have Ted on the line. He's going to be calling in here in a second, and then we will see you right after the break. So enjoy this little interlude.
dark road at night or strolling through the bar. When the light begins to change, I sometimes feel a little strange, a little anxious when it's dark. Fear of the dark, fear of the dark. I have a constant fear that something's always near. Fear of the dark, fear of the dark. I have a phobia that someone's always there.
Back everybody here to the break and for the halfway point here of Suspense Radio. I want to thank you again for joining us, however you're listening, wherever you're listening. It's been a fabulous show, and we are now going to be joined by our next guest. author of The Sanctuary. The book is out. Author Ted Decker. So, Ted, thank you so much for coming on, and how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and so we talked a little bit about before you came on, and I was kind of mentioning everybody about the book, The Sanctuary, which is in turn kind of a series because The Priest Graveyard has the same characters in Danny Hansen. You have Renee Gilmore coming back over here in The Sanctuary. So can you kind of give us a little behind the scenes of, you know, kind of how the conceptualization kind of came from The Priest Graveyard into The Sanctuary with the same characters?
Yeah, sure. Actually, The Sanctuary is a standalone book. It just used the characters from The Priest Graveyard, so two totally different stories with the same characters. And it continues their stories, but neither one is dependent on the other. And in The Sanctuary, it starts off, Danny Hansen is a priest who has taken blame for the murder of three people, and as a result been sentenced to 50 years of prison. And he's taken a vow of nonviolence. As a priest, he was a serial killer in the priest's graveyard. Now, and that didn't work well for him at all. He was a vigilante, but now he finds himself in prison for a 50-year sentence. The problem with taking a vow of nonviolence in prison is that, prison is a very harsh environment, and it turns even harsher when he's moved to this experimental prison in California that's bent on rehabilitation, but the warden has it out for him, and things go very, very bad. And Danny, however, is a very, very strong, very strong character. I mean, he grew up in Bosnia during the war, and so what develops is a cat and mouse game, wit against wit, and gets very, very intense. It is one of the most intensely paced novels I've written, so it's quite a ride.
Yeah, the one thing that I find just fascinating with the book, because with reading The Priest Graveyard and then coming over into Sanctuary, and pretty much your thriller stories in general, I love that you have that spiritual kind of undertone in your books, because you use that very well when you're writing the characters. It gives them a lot much more depth. Like I mentioned, you have Danny Hansen here on one side, you have Renee Gilmore on the other, and they come two totally separate worlds that you're able to kind of mesh together. And you kind of took a big risk when you, with thrillers, that you really don't see the aspect that you put in there with that kind of spirituality and that kind of depth that kind of comes to the characters.
Yeah.
That had to be a little bit, you took a big gamble doing it that way.
Well, the thing that is that I tackle really the big questions of human nature. Questions like, how far would you go to save your daughter? For example, in Bowman's Daughters. Or in this case, the larger question is, does punitive justice work? Does tit for tat work? Does an eye for an eye work? And how does that affect society? How does that affect an individual? So you take an individual, you put them into a pressure cooker kind of situation, like the characters in The Sanctuary. And how does it affect them emotionally? How does it affect their – does it reshape them? It's like putting someone in a prison of war camp. How does that reshape their psyches? And, of course, a larger question is whether or not the whole concept of punishment within our society, and also the whole concept of punishment within this idea of a God.
Mm-hmm.
So many people grow up as Christians like I did. I grew up as a Christian, but I have deep, deep questions about my past and about this whole concept of a punitive God. And so I write to explore those questions, and they're under the surface. So the plot and the characters drive the whole story forward. But at the same time, we get to explore these philosophical questions that I'm exploring about my own journey through this life, and that's why I write. I write to explore.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, like when people read, and again, we're speaking here with Ted Decker, and his website is teddecker.com. The book is called The Sanctuary, which is out now, brings the same characters from The Priest Graveyard, if you've read that, and you're going to move it over with Danny Hansen and Renee Gilmore. So when you're looking at that blank page and you're figuring out what your next book is going to be, you're pretty much asking yourself the humanistic question of emotion how can someone and what is someone going to do in a certain situation? And is that kind of how you are building your characters and your story around, by asking just maybe that one sentence to yourself that you want to explore personally as a person and as an author?
Absolutely. I mean, for me, a novel is a great, a story is a great way to take an idea or a theory, i.e. this is the meaning of life, or my purpose, and, you know, this is what it means to love somebody, for example. Putting it into, okay, let's test that. Let's test an idea in an act, put it on the ground by putting it into a story and see how the characters act or react when they're pressed, when they're really pressed. We tend to say a lot of things in our lives. We have all kinds of philosophies and beliefs, but when pressed, those beliefs fall apart. And you know what I'm saying? So it's like I say, well, I love you, but then when something, I love you unconditionally, but then that person mm-hmm. does something that pisses us off, and or it seems totally unfair, and suddenly all these conditions come in. It turns out that we don't really love unconditionally at all. In fact, we are full of conditions, and as a result, we're constantly pulled by competing values in our life, and it puts people in a great place of suffering and misery. And so when I write to really explore the challenges that I face in my own life. And I think my primary body of readers, they are people who, you know, beyond just the great crazy ride that they get in my novels, they're fascinated by this inquiry into human nature. Into really, I say my novels are like mirrors. You know, they see themselves in it. You see yourself, and you identify with characters depending on who you are, and you take away whatever you take away from one of my novels based on who you are. If it frightens you, it means there's already fear inside of you and something frightens you. It's a safe way to explore the deepest reaches of and our, you know, sometimes our the depravity deep within us, if, or the hopes that we have, or the questions that we have. It's a safe way to go to the edge of the cliff. And, you know, through story. Does that make sense?
It does. And, you know, when I'm sitting here and I'm sitting here and listening to you, I'm kind of wondering, when you go and you write a book like The Sanctuary or like The Priest's Graveyard, do you end up, when you're finished, do you end up having kind of more questions with the subject, like you said, you know, does, you know, kind of penal, prism and eye for an eye, does that kind of work? Do you end up figuring out, hey, I kind of have more questions? Do your readers, when they contact you and they talk to you, do they kind of help you figure out, maybe look into a different direction? Or do you kind of get closure? Do you kind of understand it better? How does it happen for you?
No, I definitely understand it better. But, you know, life is a journey. And one thing I've learned is that you know, what I as we go through this journey called life, what we learn in our own experience often overturns what we thought we knew 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. I mean, think of yourself. You're like, you know, think of the things that you believed when you were 17 that you were so sure of, that now suddenly you say, well, shoot, I don't, that doesn't work for me. So life is it's a journey. And the things that you believe now, you may find the things that you think, well, this is how my life works. This is how I can be happy. If I do X, Y, Z, I will be happy. But it may be that 10 years from now, the things you believe now, in fact, probably the things you believe now, will fail you. And this is essentially the purpose of life, is to discover what true contentment, you know, how to find true contentment and satisfaction and fulfillment in life. And many of the things that we grew up believing, as it turns out, don't bring us to that point. And so we keep exploring other ways. And that's essentially the journey of life. So it's an ongoing journey. Yeah, I come to resolution, but sometimes 5 years later, that resolution fails me as well. It's a very authentic, honest look at life, and that is what attracts my readers.
Yeah, that's the one thing, because when you're reading a book, again, like The Sanctuary, like The Priest's Graveyard, going back to like Three of the Bone Collector, you can definitely tell, and the reader gets the sense that you have put almost literally a piece of you with each book. So people kind of get that closeness. They kind of get that understanding of maybe where you're trying to lead them and where you're trying to go. And you're doing it in a thriller aspect, so you're also entertaining at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like to say that my novels are pure escapism. I mean, I'm taking people to the very edge, to things that they wouldn't find in real life. You know, in other words, like, let's just go a little bit further than what you would actually experience in your own life, because it's a safe way to do it. You do it through story. But you take the ride with the characters, and you really feel like you're in that situation. And so you're cringing with them, you're crying with them, or you are full of, you know, passion with them. And that makes for a very, very a nail-biting experience that is still relatively safe. That's why we love movies. We get to peer in on this world. It's just like the same thing with a novel. And, you know, it's my way. In a way, my novels are like my journals. I just happen to sell them. You know, I mean, they reflect my own questions, my own journey through life. I mean, having written now, I think I've published 35 novels.
Yeah, you're up there.
It's crazy, but I just, it's kind of an obsession I have. And it's the way I do it. And in the case of The Sanctuary in particular, I'll tell you what, our whole justice system is completely jacked up.
You're preaching to the choir on that one, baby. I'll tell you.
Okay, well, there you go. I mean, like, we are taking kids, we're taking people, and it's like taking puppy dogs and throwing them into the cages with bulldogs. They come back out. And recidivism rate, you know, 70% in this country, the percentage of people that go back to prison.
Oh, it's over 85% or something, yeah.
Yeah, it's very high.
It's a joke.
And so what we're doing is the number of people incarcerated in our country has increased sevenfold in the last 40 years. There's a 700% as a percentage of the population. The United States has five times as many people per capita behind bars as any European country or Canada. It's like it's crazy what's happening in our country, and it's all happening. It's all hidden. It's like a totally secret society that's hidden. We want to take these people and shove them out of our sight. The problem is these people, instead of you know, helping them, because everybody who is thrown behind bars because they were caught for possession, for example. You know, they're just wounded people like you and I. They're just looking for an answer. They're looking for love, really. It may be in the wrong places. And then they get thrown into these monster factories, and they come out, you know, with new skills, and they come out often more ruined, I should say, than when they went in. So our whole approach to crime and punishment is backwards. These are the people. It's like a wayward teenager. You don't just beat them and throw them in the basement.
Correct.
If you have a wayward teenager, we all know that, you know, they'll just turn against you if you beat them, without giving them love and care and affection. They will continue down that path that caused them to stray from whatever, deviate from whatever path that they first deviated from. So, you know, ultimately, we have a broken system that is, you know, turning our country into a penal colony. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably familiar with Shawshank Redemption, of course, the book that Stephen King wrote, and then the movie. And one of the best lines in there is Tim Robbins saying, "I was an honest man on the outside. It took prison for me to become a criminal."
Exactly.
And that's kind of what we do. We put criminals into jail, thinking that they're going to rehabilitate and come out, like you say, as like those puppy dogs. Instead, they come out a lot worse than they did because of how we treat them. And then I always kind of view it as like homelessness, where everybody says we have to help the homeless, we have to fix them. But those are the same people that when they're walking down the street, they're just stepping over, hoping that they don't look at them. And it's kind of like, you know, you kind of be really hypocritical in that kind of fact. And it's the same thing with prisons. I don't know if you went and how many you visited and how many people you spoke with, maybe, and kind of in the research of this book, but yeah, I mean, everything that you're saying is absolutely true, but people don't want to know that. They just want it to, as long as it's not in my backyard, then it's okay.
Yeah, well, ultimately, it will be in their backyard.
It will be, yeah.
Because ultimately, what we do is society becomes more and more, it falls apart. You know, we think that by becoming very strict and by leveraging harsh punishment, we will improve. We'll keep our streets clean. It doesn't work that way. Only love heals anyone, ever. Starting with yourself. If you don't love yourself, and you punish yourself, and you put yourself under tremendous pressure and are constantly degrading yourself, you're going to hate yourself. In fact, the truth is, John, most of us secretly, deep down inside, hate ourselves as we are. It's very difficult for us to look in the mirror and really honestly say, you're perfect as you are. You're beautiful. If we,
I think a lot of us, like you said, going back to when you were 17 or even younger than that, everybody maybe had this blueprint for what they thought their life was going to be, and it didn't kind of pan out that way. So a lot of them, a lot of people maybe feel like, oh, I failed in what I was supposed to do, and therefore I'm not that good of a person, when in actuality, you might not have failed at what you did. You just didn't see the path that you could have taken that way.
Yeah, and that's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, almost everybody has this experience young. They learn very young that they're not good enough. And as we go through life, that gets reinforced over and over. You're not good enough, whether it's with a lover, you know, a girlfriend, wife, whatever it is. Everyone, or just in sports, or in school, or being bullied. I mean, or on the streets, or in your job. It's like, I'm not good enough. If I were good enough, I would have that car. I would have that house. I would look like her. I would look like him. I would be this. I'd be that. As we go through life, we learn to hate ourselves. We really do. We cover it up with all kinds of platitudes, with all kinds of brave statements, with religious beliefs, with all these declarations of who we are. But deep down inside, secretly, our secret hate for ourselves continues to grow. If we do not learn to turn and to love ourselves and to understand the beauty that's already within us, really life becomes... It's been said that you can't make yourself better. You can only realize how beautiful you already are. And that's the course of life. So the sanctuary is very much about that.
Right.
And, you know, how do you take what's broken in yourself? We're all in prisons. We put ourselves in prisons. And this is a story about the prisons we put ourselves in all the time. Those prisons might be insecurity. They might be, you know, that's the biggest one by far. People are just insecure. It's a prison,
right, yeah.
So it totally changes the way you behave, and it keeps you locked up, and you suffer tremendously through the day, through the weeks, through the month. And you go up, but ultimately you crash back down, you know? It's like an endless cycle. Well, how do you break free of that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what my novels are about. How do you break free from the prisons that we put ourselves in?
Now, we're speaking here with New York Times bestselling author Ted Decker. The latest book that came out October 30th is called The Sanctuary. TedDecker.com is his website. Like him on Facebook with the other 130,000 people he has on there. And now, when you're saying you're looking and you finish The Sanctuary and you've delved into this, you know, deep emotional issues that, you know, that you've written about, new questions, of course, might pop up. Like you said, what you thought 5 years ago might not be true today and things change. So when you're thinking of writing kind of your next book, is that something that you had realized maybe back with the book 3 or something in The Bride Collector that you wanted to explore more, that you kind of go on further? Or is it really just moving yourself on into life and seeing how evolution evolves within society and how people evolve today? Because I'll tell you, I look back and I think people are a lot stranger now than they were when I was 16 years old, and I thought everybody was strange back then.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question. For me, it's a very personal journey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so much looking outward at society. I'm writing about people in society, but really for me it's a very personal journey. So like, for example, in The Sanctuary, I got to the end of that book. It was a crushing book for me to write. And I spent a lot of time, you know, with in interviews, and of course I watched tons of documentaries. There's lots of really good documentaries on Discovery Channel, The Learning Channel, et cetera, you know, Lock Up, Lockdown, all these prison documentaries that are weekly shows, and you get a real sense. That's the best place because you get an inside view that you can never get just by visiting. But for me, it's a very, very personal journey, and I got to the end of it saying, okay, well, punishment, this whole idea of you're bad, you know, do the crime, do the time. Socially, it's a real difficult challenge. But I take it inward personally. So I constantly beat myself up. I've got to do better. Oh, I hit number 8 on the New York Times bestsellers list. Oh, well, that's not good enough. I got to hit, you know what I'm saying? How long am I there? Well, I got to hit number 5. I mean, it's almost impossible to be satisfied because we constantly degrade ourselves on one level or another. So for me, in the sanctuary, I came away from that book saying, okay, well, that doesn't work. It doesn't serve me at all. What does? It's almost like going through life saying, you know, there's an old, I don't know if it's Dr. Seuss or whatever, but there's this book I used to read. It's called Are You My Mother? And it was this bird going around.
Oh, yeah. That's
remember that
right.
Book?
I do remember Are You My Mother. Man,
Are You
I
My Mother?
I 10 years old reading that book.
What a kick. So, you know, it's kind of like, okay, well, you go up to the this little bird goes up to this elephant. Are you my mother? No. Okay, it goes up to an alligator. Are you my mother? You go through life trying to figure out, where do I belong? Where do
exactly.
I fit? Who am I? It's a, you know, and a lot of my novels, it's you know, I do come to personal realizations. And it's like, well, that doesn't serve me at all. In fact, after The Sanctuary, I went into a very deep exploration of this whole notion that, you know what, truly, I am beautiful without the need for correction, because all the correction within me, you know, most of the correction that I place on myself, that need for correction I place on myself, is completely self-imposed. And it's actually what breaks me down. It's self-imposed punishment. It's a form of self-hatred. And that works its way deeply into the next novel that I wrote, which hasn't come out yet, obviously.
Right.
So it is. For me, it absolutely moves forward. It is a journey. My novels are a journey.
And so you're pretty much day in, day out, you're putting pen to paper and you're writing something, whether it's a novel, whether it's just a paragraph, a sentence or something. You're putting something down pretty much every day of your life.
Well, I mean, I used to do that. Now I work, I try to limit myself to Monday through Friday. And
okay.
I work, you know, I work religiously for a certain number of hours each day. And but my mind, you know, my mind is constantly going. I'm kind of cursed with an obsession for discovery. And, you know, I'm kind of a philosopher of sorts. And, you know,
right.
I mean, I say philosophy in university. So, and I just happen to connect with people on a very blue collar basis, which makes, you know, so the questions the average person has are the same questions I have. And I just explore them, and I've found a way to really explore them through story. But it never ends. It's in a way, writing has become my own prison. You know,
I see.
Your success
yeah.
often becomes your prison.
That's true,
you
because
know?
It's almost like the you know the next book, whether it's your publisher or your fans or someone, almost putting the pressure to say it has to
yeah.
be better than the last one, or it has to be this, and you're just like, I mean, and you always give yourself. In your books already, you almost have to ask yourself, can I give any more than I already have?
Yeah, and what do I do if I don't? In other words,
right.
It's like you learn, you become conditioned that this is my life now. I go up into my office and I write, and I write, and I write. And,
and you write.
And if I don't, what do I do? Well, you know, it's... that's a very, very common, very, very common condition, especially amongst people that are, quote, successful in our society. It's very easy for successful people in society to enjoy that success for only a very short period of time before they become quite miserable because they realize it does not satisfy at all for long, at all. So then, now what? And on we go.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, Ted, I could talk with you for hours. I mean, it was great. This is the first time we've ever spoken. And I'll tell you, and it was one of the most emotional conversations that I think I've ever had with an author. And I want to just thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about the subject matter and everything that was in The Sanctuary, along with, you know, everything in all of your books, kind of, and how you kind of do everything. I mean, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you. I have to thank you so much for coming on.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Thank you, John. Anytime.
Yeah. So, again, enjoy yourself, Ted, and have fun. And we cannot wait to see what that next book is that you wrote and what's out. But right now, The Sanctuary is the one that we need to focus on.
That'll work.
All right, man. You have a good one. Enjoy yourself.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, John.
Right,
appreciate
bye-bye.
It. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. So, again, everybody, that is New York Times bestselling author Ted Decker. The book is The Sanctuary. If you listen to the last 25 minutes of us talking here back and forth, you will see the raw emotional just the raw emotion that Ted puts into all of his books. Maybe you get now a better understanding of how he kind of wraps everything up here in with his stories and the questions that he asks and the questions that you need to ask yourself as a reader while you're reading these books. How would you experience and how do you feel that these experiences are within yourself while you're, you know, reading a book like The Sanctuary or The Priest's Graveyard? Again, the two characters that were in The Priest's Graveyard are now in The Sanctuary in Danny Hansen and Renee Gilmore. So check out The Sanctuary. It is out now, teddecker.com. We want to thank him so much for being on. We are going to take a short break, and we are going to be back here with our last guest, Anna Alborn. Hopefully I said her name right. And we will then see you in about 3 minutes. So in the meantime, listen to this. We have had a fabulous show. We are down here now to our last segment. I can't believe the hour and a half has went by so fast. I did get an email from Marie Force. I guess something happened when we tried to call her. Her phone didn't ring, so we're going to get her back on the air sometime. I feel very bad that we weren't able to talk with her. But if you want to listen to me ramble on for a half hour, really kind of about nothing, you can kind of go back and listen to the 10:30 part, or you can just kind of skip it and right after Ken Anderson and jump right into Ted Decker's interview that was like I said, one of the deepest interviews I've ever had with an author on that kind of emotional level. And so now we're going to welcome here to the show, her name is Anya Alborn, and her book is called The Neighbors. Her website is anyaalborn.com. That's AnyaAlborn.com. So, Anya, we want to thank you so much for coming on today. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you, John?
Doing fabulous. Again, the book is called The Neighbors. I believe it is out right now, or just coming out, but I believe it's out right now. Am I right?
It's going to be released on the 27th, so just after Thanksgiving.
Okay, yeah, so it is going to be, so this is the 27th. But this is not your first one because you did have a book called Seed that came out, but The Neighbors is the one that we're curious about. So give everybody a little bit behind the scenes, you know, with your characters and the book and the conceptualization of it to kind of get a little understanding for people who do not know who you are.
Well, The Neighbors is pretty simple. It's a story that's been told quite, a lot of times over, but it's not like anything super new, but I put my own twist on it because I basically wanted to explore the concept of serial killers. And I've always been very fascinated with serial killers, but not in the aspect of, what they do specifically and all the gruesome, gory details. My fascination with them is the fact that these people are chameleons and they can just blend into our society and sometimes live on our street without us knowing for their whole entire lives. And so I really wanted to explore that. The Neighbors delved into that, where we have kind of a young guy who's leaving his home for the first time. He has a pretty bad home situation, and he just wants to get out and start his own life and do his own thing. He moves in with an old friend, and they kind of try to reconnect, but there's something off that he can't put his finger on, but he's very hopeful, and there are a couple of neighbors who live right next door who have this perfect, wonderful, beautiful house. They are just those picture-perfect people that mow their lawn and prune their rose bushes, and they're always put together. And because he comes from this kind of broken home, he really connects with that because that's what he's never had. And things kind of spiral out of control at that point because those neighbors are not who they seem.
Now, you said that you wanted to explore the serial killer and maybe the psyche of, you know, what makes, and I remember, again, from the Addams Family, it was just a funny little thing when, I think it was in the second one, when they asked Wednesday who she was, and she said a serial killer, and they said, she goes, serial killers look just like you and me, because it's all mm-hmm. you can pick them out of a lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Did you kind of find maybe what you were looking for? How deep did you kind of go into to try to understand maybe what turn someone, because, you know, a lot of people and a lot of psychologists will say that we all have these characteristics within us. It's just a matter of which ones we decide
right.
to act on. Did you find
right.
any revelation? Did you find anything like that?
I think we all have something dark within us. And that's what's really fascinating, is that, you know, some of us, we're just, you know, most of us are just normal people who go on with their day-to-day lives. But then there's always that one guy who just, you know, they just, for some reason, they snap. Or, you know, there's something about their childhood or you know, some kind of trauma that they went through that really just changes them. We say, you know, for the worst, but do they know whether or not that's, you know, what they're doing is bad? That's like a whole other topic that we could talk about. When I was writing, I really did try to go as far into the serial killer mindset as I could without actually being a serial killer. I mean, there are only certain some things that I can speculate on, thank God, you know. But, yeah, I one of the things that really gets me is that these people, you know, we look at them and we say, oh, my God, this person is such a monster. How could someone do that? But at the end of the day, these people are human just like you and I. So, mm-hmm. you know, they get up in the morning and they go fill their gas tank and they have to go to the grocery store. And who knows, you know, maybe you invited them to a barbecue and they played with your kid in the backyard. They do have that monstrous quality to them, but they are still human beings. So when I was writing, my antagonist, Harlow Ward, who is this very upstanding older woman, she's very kind of Jackie O, very kind of Donna Reed. When I was writing her, I really wanted to get that monstrous quality out, but I also wanted to highlight the fact that, you know, she is just a woman who's been traumatized by these certain things in her life that, you know, she sometimes doesn't even know that what she's doing is wrong, and sometimes she has these moments of clarity where she says, oh my God, what am I doing? But then she justifies it to herself as, oh, well, you know, if this hadn't happened, I wouldn't be like this, and what am I supposed to do? You know, I really try to get deep into that where when someone's reading the book, there are these uncomfortable moments where you actually feel for her. You know, you don't just sit there and say, oh, well, this lady is insane and, you know, I hate her. She does have these moments where hopefully she connects with the reader in a way that is really kind of disconcerting, you know, because you know that she's a monster, but yet you're thinking, well, maybe she's not that bad. You know, maybe this is just all circumstantial and she couldn't help it.
Now, again, we're speaking here with Anna Alborn, and the book is called The Neighbors. Now, when you decided that you were writing the book, is there one specific kind of maybe sentence or scene that you feel maybe captures the essence of maybe your character, Andrew Morrison, or the plot in general, that you can maybe point out, well, you know, without giving anything away, but is there that kind of that one scene in there that when you went back and reread it, you kind of said, you know, that's the one that I was trying to get, and I think that, and you got it off correctly.
Oh, my gosh, that's a really hard question.
Well, I don't give easy ones here. I'm not going to give you all easy questions, like, what's your name? So, but you know what I mean? Maybe just that emotional spot in the book, something that, you know, you put in there, you know, that maybe Andrew did or something happened to him, that just kind of captures the essence of what you were trying to, you know, bring out.
There are a lot of scenes that kind of capture what's going on within Andrew. I think probably the moment that he actually sees the wards, which are Harlow and Red Ward, when he finally sees them, he's moving into this house that's really kind of dilapidated. So he's going from one bad situation to another with the hope that, you know, well, I'm switching gears here and I'm going to be on my own and I'm going to find my independence. And it doesn't matter that I'm going from kind of one slum to another slum because I am still improving my own situation one step at a time. And then he looks across to this perfect house and he sees these perfect people. And he really has an emotional response where he feels like that's what I want, you know, and that's what makes him reach out to the wards in the first place. I would say that's probably the one thing that he really connects to is that really deep-seated desire that he's had since he was a little boy and he didn't even know because he's from the TV generation. He sat around and watched all these sitcoms and things where he's watching these perfect families that he doesn't have, and that was the only way that he could experience that family lifestyle. And so when he sees the wards, he kind of has this really strong reaction that this is my chance. You know, this is, I can make my life better, and these people really exist. If they really exist, that means that maybe I can exist in that world as well. So I think that's probably, I mean, again, there are so many scenes where it's really kind of an internal dialogue for Andrew throughout the whole thing. It's more character-driven than it is plot-driven, just because that's the way I write. I have such a passion for writing characters and their backstory and exploring, you know, the whole psychology behind what they're thinking and what they do. That there are really tons of scenes like that throughout, but the one pivotal scene, of course, would be when he does see that this lifestyle that he's wanted for so long really does exist out in the world. But what's funny is that, you know, he sees that and he connects with it, but then you see that these perfect people aren't perfect at all, you know, and it twists it on its head. So what he really wants, does that honestly exist, or is it just this facade that these people are putting on? So he has to struggle with that question in the end, but that would probably be the one pivotal point in the book where everything kind of changes for him.
And so when you were deciding that, you know, this was something that you were going to go write again with the book The Neighbors, and you, you know, explore that kind of serial killer mentality and things like that, is this something that you're going to go on, you know, further with your career? Are you going to stay in the genre? Are you going to jump maybe a little bit into different things? Do you still have a lot of unanswered kind of questions emotionally when it comes to, you know, these kinds of basically horrific events that, you know, all these authors write about in these kinds of books? Are you going to keep going on forward? You know, what's your plans, I guess, you know, coming up in the future with future books?
Well, The Neighbors is definitely suspense and thriller. My
right.
first book, Seed, was a hardcore horror novel. So this, The Neighbors was actually, it surprised my editor when he read it, because he said, oh, well, I thought you were going to stick with just really old school kind of hardcore horror, and I'm kind of all over the place, so I have all these things that I want to explore.
Right.
There's no way that The Neighbors has gotten serial killers out of my blood. I mean, serial killers and all these crazy people that we have in our society, I just find them so intriguing in that, you know, they exist among us, that there's no way that The Neighbors is going to be the last book that I write, you know, the first and last dealing with this topic. But I kind of jump around. My next book is actually going to be like an old school monster horror type throwback. So I jump around a little bit, but definitely I'm of the belief that the scariest thing out there are people in general. You know, the worst monsters are human beings. So,
oh, people scare the hell out of me every day.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the thing that's the scariest, because, you know, you can be afraid of demons and monsters and whatever, but those things are not going to show up at your door. You know, they're not going to show up as controversial a topic as this is. They're not going to show up at a movie theater, you know, and open fire when, you know, you didn't do anything. You know, there's nothing that you could have done to prevent it. There's nothing you did to cause it. So yeah, it's a topic that's near and dear to me. I love the psychology behind it. And when I say love, you know, it's kind of like love and loathe, because it's just...
Oh, no, you can love it. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
If people love the show Dexter, and that guy kills everybody. You know, I think a lot of people, when they say, oh, my God, you know, I love serial killers, and then people look at them like, you love serial killers? What do you mean?
Right.
And they kind of look at you odd, and it's like, wait a second. I'm not a serial killer. I don't think that what they do is correct, but I love to be able to get into the psyche of people, because that's just one emotion of, like, you know, and like I try to say, here's people. Okay, this guy goes out and kills people. Well, what makes this woman become someone who talks about people behind their back? Why does she do that? You know,
mm-hmm.
yeah, one is murder and one is bad, but they're both emotions. You know, it's like, why, you know, why do people act the way that they do? Why, you know, everybody has those two faces. Everybody has
right.
those different faces that they put on. And that's just something that, you know, you're intriguing, you know, that you want to learn. So are you going to then write, when you start into this, is it going to be a lot more psychological kind of in-depth that you're going to go with?
Yeah, I'm definitely psychologically driven when it comes to writing. I actually, psychology was my first major in college. I wanted to be a criminal profiler, and I wanted to get into the whole abnormal psychology where you sit down with, like, criminally insane people, and I really wanted to get into that. But
have you been able to interview any of them?
No, I have not. I have not been able to do that. Maybe someday, but honestly, you know, when you want to talk about fear and what we as writers of this twisted stuff are really afraid of, I think that would be one of the things that I would really have a challenge approaching, would be to sit down with someone like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I feel like a lot of these people, you know, they're crazy, but they're also brilliant. You know, and it's
sure.
sort of terrifying to think that you could sit down with someone like that and they could just twist your mind just by sitting there. You know, you've got that plexiglass between you, and but they can still somehow reach out and grab you, you know?
Yeah.
It's just...
Absolutely. I mean, I get it. And I just want to remind you, again, we're speaking here with Anna Alborn. The book is The Neighbors. It's AnnaAlborn.com, AnnaAlborn.com, to find out a lot more about, you know, what Anna's up to and what she's been writing. But you do pose kind of an interesting question. And so when you were talking about other authors and this and that, what was maybe one of the best pieces of advice you might have gotten from another author when you decided to maybe switch gears, or maybe you had some you know, reservations about wanting to maybe dive into something that could be, that is kind of this dark to do. Did you get any advice from anybody? Did they tell you anything, you know, that you've now taken?
I didn't get any specific advice, but I know a lot of, you know, authors that write this kind of stuff, and the general consensus is just, you know, keep the characters as believable as you possibly can. Otherwise, it's not going to work, because, you know, as we've been saying, these people really do exist. They really are, at the end of the day, they're human beings, just like us, which is what makes them so scary. So I really try to keep it so grounded in reality that maybe, hopefully, after you read The Neighbors, you take a look at your own neighbors and
mm-hmm.
say, well, you know, I wonder if, you know, these nice people that I've been living next to for a decade are not really who they claim and seem to be. So hopefully I get some people questioning the people who live along their street.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're, what kind of thing, let's just kind of go, like, outside of the books, you know, what kind of TV shows, movies, things like that, that you're looking forward to, that you watch, that, you know, that kind of intrigue you, you know, what's kind of on your DVR?
I am a big fan of American Horror Story.
Oh.
So So, you know, I got to say, I really connected with the first season more than I'm connecting with this one. This one, they have
like
a...
Isn't this called like Asylum or something? Isn't that
it's set up as an insane asylum, and there's all sorts of really interesting characters, but it's kind of a lot. It's a lot piled on top of everything's happening all at once, so it's kind of like you connect to something and then it's gone. With the first season, it was based on a family that moves into this house that they call the murder house because all these murders kept happening decade after decade. And just weird things start happening, and you have this really interesting dynamic between the family members. And then there's this crazy lady who lives next door, and she actually kind of inspired...
Isn't that Jessica Tandy?
It's not Jessica Tandy.
No,
Jessica... Oh, my gosh. Her name is slipping my mind. She is so cool.
Because I got to be honest. I watched the first episode of that show, and I'm like, yeah, I don't get it. And I stopped watching it. Never watched another episode again.
It's pretty hard to get into at first. You have to give it a couple of episodes.
And I'm very much one of those people like, you know what, I'm not going to sit. I have so many other things that I could be doing. I can't waste my time for an hour and watch something that I don't get.
You know, I'm like that the majority of the time as well. But I wanted to see where they were going to take it because I had heard so many just weird things about this show from people who got to watch it in advanced screenings and stuff like that. And they said things like, we have no idea how they're going to keep this up, this pace, this like frantic pace and keeping everything connected seems almost impossible. So I was really intrigued by that. But the first season was very much... it just felt like there was more connection between the characters, and that's really what I go off of.
Right.
Another show that I absolutely love is Dexter.
I knew it. I knew that was coming. I meant to say, I knew. I was going to wonder when you were talking the serial killer aspect of Dexter was going to be in there.
Oh, Dexter is fantastic, and I love him because he's so conflicted, you know? It's fantastic,
And that's another show I tried watching way early on Showtime when it first came out and this and that. And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of interesting. And I got bored with it. I don't know.
God.
I mean, here's the thing. I'm a 40-page reader. If you don't give me 40 pages, I put the book down. I'm also someone who says, you know what? A lot of the times when you are writing a show that is very much a one-person character-driven thing, I think that there's times when you've gone far enough where it's like, it's enough. Because now you're either rehashing the same thing or you're really just dragging it out now. And I always say, like, okay, enough's enough. And that's kind of the way I felt with it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm a 40-page reader as well. I am so picky when it comes to the stuff that I read because there's just so much to read out there. If it doesn't capture your attention in 40 pages, absolutely. I move on to something else. When it comes to shows, you know, I'll give it a couple of episodes, but for some reason I just really connected with Dexter. It's that whole thing of, you know, he has a normal life, but he doesn't, and that just really intrigued me. And apparently it intrigues millions of people.
It does. Hey, it intrigues millions of people, you know. I try. I really don't even watch that much TV anymore anyway.
Yeah,
if I do, I either watch it on Netflix or I watch it.
Right.
The only thing that I ever watch on TV really, like truly, like religiously, is live sports. Other than that, I just, you know, I've been watching the show Arrow a little bit. I've now been watching a little bit of Lie to Me on Netflix. And I watch Hakul Prio. I watch Miss Jane Marple. Things like that because I just get very, I get bored very easily with this. I don't watch sitcoms because they bore the hell out of me because
right.
their jokes are so flippin' stale. So it does take a while. And if I go to a season, you know, and I like Game of Thrones, but that is even getting a little bit annoying where I might not finish that one. I don't know. I'm very picky. You got to keep it going. I got to see an end game. I got to see something that you're doing instead of like a Heroes or a Lost where you're just writing and you're really writing Lost. And so that's
right.
what I always feel about you.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, Anna, I want to thank you so much for coming on. We are like bolted through the time here. And again, the book is called The Neighbors. Anna Alborn. Anna Alborn is her name. And it's AnnaAlborn.com to go see the book, The Neighbors. And we want to thank you so much for coming on. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
Oh, thank you, John. It was great.
So we will talk with you later. And again, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
You too. Happy holidays to everybody.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So again, everybody, that is Anna Alborn, and her book is called The Neighbors. We want to thank all the guests we had on. Again, we apologize for Marie. We found out for some reason that when we called, it didn't show up on her cell phone. I don't know. I don't get it, but we will have her back on possibly on a show coming up. Speaking of future shows, this is what we have coming up. December 1st is our next one with John Land, Richard Doche, Joe Nassi, and Stephen James, big-time show. December 15th, we have Simon Tolkien on. Possibly we will have Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child on that show. We're trying to fill up some space. David Balducci couldn't make it, so we're trying to fill up for that one. And that will be the last shows we have for the year. So we will not be back until December 1st, and we have December 15th. And that's all we're going to have here for the remainder of the year. And then we're going to jump right into 2013. So it's going to be a very, very exciting time. Again, want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. I still like Thanksgiving. I know that people want to get rid of it and jump right into Christmas after Halloween. I'm not so fast. I like Thanksgiving. I'm not one of those people who are going to go out and start, you know, shopping at 10 p.m. Christmas night or Thanksgiving night or whatnot. There's plenty of time for me to spend my money. I don't need to spend it that night at that time. So I have a lot of time that I can blow my money on stuff. So again, everybody, enjoy your family. Enjoy Thanksgiving. Have a pleasant one. Read some books. You got a lot of stuff out there. Thank you to Kent Anderson. Thank you to Ted Decker with his book, The Sanctuary. Kent Anderson with his book, Silver Cross. And thank you to Anna Alborn with her book, The Neighbors. Goodbye, everybody. We will see you December 1st. Again, happy Thanksgiving to you and to everyone else here on Suspense Radio, Suspense Magazine. We just want to thank you. I'm John Robb. See you December 1st. Goodbye, everybody.